This is the BBC.
Here's A.L. Kennedy with A Point of View.
If you ask anyone about the times when they've felt most lonely, even inadequate, it's likely they'll eventually describe some party, some room full of strangers, or even friends and family members, all of whom seemed unattainably connected, functional, and successful. As this phenomenon is so widespread, it's a comfort to know some of those apparently convivial human beings at, say, your next office party may actually be screaming inside and imagining themselves to be hapless and ugly non-entities, the same way you are. We live in an age when technology can connect us more unremittingly than ever before. We can use this power in all manner of ways, to campaign for the civil rights of strangers, send pictures of our dinners into every available time zone, to argue across continents, or to force employees into endlessly serving their corporate masters. We may bully, threaten, or worse. Strangers and observers scramble to coin new terms for our novel online miseries, like Stanford Duck Syndrome, first used to describe stressed-out students attending Stanford University who believe the Facebook version of fellow students, the outside image of academically capable swans gliding effortlessly towards success. Seeing such apparent ease, the students feel like panicky ducks, desperately paddling in hopes of staying equally smooth on their surface, which is surely a clue that at least part of our techno-misery is very old and familiar. Our laptops, desktops, smartphones and pads and wirelessly enabled Lord knows what keep on dumping vats of mass connection over our heads and in virtual form condemn us to endless attendance at a monstrously huge and often inexplicable party. It's enough to put you off reading anything beyond work emails on any device. But we need human contacts, don't we? These are times of extreme uncertainty for many around the world and in the UK. Our streets show us a little of our rising homelessness and poverty, the survivors of ongoing traumas and conflicts, foreign and domestic. Behind closed doors, people fret over zero-hours contracts, mortgage repayments, benefits, sanctions, issues of citizenship. Possibly it's nice to have a number of world leaders in power who allow me to wake each morning and enjoy a rush of intense delight when I discover that I'm still alive, but it's hardly therapeutic. How do we arrange to stay within humanity, usefully and truthfully in touch, when groups can be dispiriting and when our driven existences have no time and the internet is crazy and we're trying to save cash? Well, I can tell you one way. Read a book. Not a gadget made of precious raw materials with an appetite for electricity, just a book. A second-hand book, a swapped book, a free book someone left in a community space, a book on a charity stall, a book someone lends you, a book you may even have been able to borrow from a library, although that is an increasingly unlikely option. And if you can afford a new book, sustainably printed, that's nice for you. But it's all better than nice. Oh, I know, I'm a writer, and more importantly a reader, I'm bound to say books are great. The thing is, there's a lot of research out there to explain why books can help us so much and why political leaders and systems that want to exert authoritarian control denigrate books, ban books, burn books, censor books and, of course, torment, imprison and execute their authors. Because books are the opposite of fear, of isolation, of inhumanity and silence. What do you do when you read? You hear voices. Researchers at Durham University have shown that the area of the brain associated with hearing voices trips into action when you read dialogue. Reading is a musical experience, even when it's not out loud. It allows you to be with thoughts and feelings of fictional and factual strangers from anywhere and nowhere. It allows you to look and feel your way through the lives of others who may apparently be very other, and yet here they are, inside your head. In your most intimate organ, the brain, you hear the author's voice, characters' voices, reported real voices, and you hear the background thrum of your own voice, that useful thing you use to declare your wants and needs and joys and to declare yourself a part of your own life. This means that a book provides a very deep company, and the experience you find in it doesn't happen in the same way for anyone else on earth. It suits you, because you help to make it. You're not being spoon-fed by a movie or sitting in a broad wash of music. You're in the most narrative narratives there are. And if this makes you feel less alone, even happy, entertained, inspired, nothing shows. It's your secret and your interior freedom, maybe rebellion. Even if they cut your head open and looked at your brain, none of your joy would leave a trace. Many governments and authorities aren't fond of joys that leave no evidence. And what you read, once you get into the habit, can slowly steer your thinking into forms that aren't quite the standard issue. Research from Southern Illinois University suggests that reading can play a significant part in forming personality, with more demanding and involving texts producing deeper and greater variation, and more boilerplate material producing more predictable results. In effect, reading is a way to become more of the person you're interested in being. It gives that lifelong promise. But that's not all. Research carried out for the Reading Agency suggests that reading as a leisure activity, entering into those cheap, portable, secret worlds, remembering them, imagining their social interactions, can improve parent-child communication, decrease dementia symptoms, and reduce depression. At which point, I'll remind you of the ongoing controversy over the practice, theory, and testing of effective English language teaching. And almost a third of UK adults don't read for pleasure, ever. And that's a shame. Because research from the University of Oklahoma and elsewhere suggests strongly that exposure to other people's stories, to the truth of interior lives, not our own, strengthens our theory of mind. That's the idea that people other than ourselves are also having ideas and emotions and hopes and dreams and loves and all the rest. As an author and solitary, if not selfish, type, I know painfully clearly how easy it is to assume that everybody else is no more than a product of my imagination. Slapdash tweets, the poorly crafted rumours that pass for some journalism, hasty and imperfect, incomplete expressions from others may give you the impression that the interior lives around you are stunted, absent. But that's nonsense. You are at least as complex and surprising as I am, and you know it. Quality fiction and non-fiction are all about bringing us lives, personalities and psychologies which are unfamiliar or overlooked and yet fascinating, involving, beautiful. Access all areas. May I suggest that the yelling and trauma of daytime TV and the braying hatred of our headlines nudge us towards a sociopathic mindset. They make us ashamed of our species. Books turn us towards the practice of basic respect for the value and sovereignty of each other's existence. This, naturally enough, brings about increased levels of empathy. Empathy and insight into other human beings. Have you ever lived in an age when that wasn't useful? Didn't produce good decision-making? You're amazing, in depth, not because of a Facebook facade, a glitzy suit, a headline, but because you are unique, vulnerable, potentially creative, silly, loving, sometimes lonely at parties, and all the rest. Unlike me, and yet fundamentally like me. Reading makes me want to tell you the truth because you will deserve it. A book is a conscious exercise in fellow feeling. Without a belief that the story is happening to someone or something human-like or being told by a person, the reader won't stay on board. But don't think that because I write books I'll have some kind of exquisitely fine-tuned insight into human nature. Research from Toronto University suggests that readers and writers have pretty much the same ability in this area. Writers just trying to get paid for writing down their insights. So as a fellow human being, I'd say, if you want comfortable company, read a book. If you want to understand human beings, of course, go and meet some, but rest at ease too, like Will in Robert Louis Stevenson's story Will o' the Mill, who waited while the world came to him and lived a good life. Open a book. Let the world in. You might like it.
That was A Point of View, written and presented by A.L. Kennedy.